Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. Today is Saturday, the 18th of June, and I'm Ankit Prasad. Let's find out what happened last night before we see what experts we have on today. First up was the Group E encounter between the Italians and Sweden. Italy boss Antonio Conte must either have taken a lot of heart from his side's impressive defeat of Belgium in their first match, or simply thought that Sweden were there for the taking, or both, as he ditched Matteo Darmian in favour of the more attack-ready Alessandro Florenzi. It may not entirely have had the desired result. Italy looked quite disjointed in the opening exchanges. They did have the first look at goal though. Parolo slipped in Florenzi, who more or less passed the ball back to the Swedish keeper. At the other end, Zlatan Ibrahimovic began to drop deep to try to influence proceedings a little more, but despite his efforts, Sweden didn't manage to trouble Buffon in the entire first half. They were still clearly in it though, and the game had felt quite evenly poised. After the restart, Italy came into it a little more. Eder had a crack at goal which landed in the crowd, and so did one or two Swedish crosses. Eder had looked lively and dynamic, and Conte bought on Simone Zaza for the more lumbering Pelle, and in the 80th minute his side finally emerged from the smokescreen and had a real chance to win, as an in-swinging cross by Giaccarini from the left side was met by Parolo at the far post, but his header came off the crossbar. The writing was on the wall, and just when it was looking like Sweden would settle for the draw, Chiellini took a quick throw-in at the half-line, and the ball reached Eder about 35 metres from goal. The Inter striker didn't even look for support, he simply drove at the Swedish goal, and despite being surrounded by defenders, none of them made a challenge, and from just inside the box his shot found the corner of the net. It was a great goal by the Inter striker, full of the kind of pace and intent that had been missing in the match thus far, and the timing ensured that the shell-shocked Swedes had no reply, as Italy won 1-0. Next up were the dark horses Croatia versus the Czech Republic, and right from the start the match looked like attack v defence. Croatia's movement, especially from the likes of Rakitic, Mandzukic and Perisic, was giving the Czechs all sorts of trouble, and Perisic was just inches away from making contact with a great cross in the 22nd minute. Rakitic had a shot saved by Peter Cech, but just a little bit later, Perisic ran at Sivok down the left channel, jinked outside as he reached the box, but then surprised just about everyone with an accurate shot that was past Cech in a flash and nestled in the corner of the net. The first half ended 1-0 to the Croats. After the restart, Krajic finally tested the Croatian keeper Subasic, as with his back to goal he skillfully hit a ball falling right out of the skies over his shoulder. Croatia would be the ones to score again though. The Czechs gave the ball away in their own half and Brozovic put Rakitic through on goal. The Barca man had Peter Cech rushing at him, but he composedly dinked the ball over him and into the net. The floodgates looked like they would open after that. Mandzukic had a chance he really should have scored with, and Rakitic's well-hit free kick went narrowly over. Croatia had a problem however, and that was that their midfield dynamo Luka Modric had to go off injured at the hour mark, and the desperately poor up until this point Czechs took advantage of his absence. Rosicki put in a cross from the right, and substitute Milan Skoda headed it from the penalty spot with surprising power and accuracy, past Subasic to open the Czechs' account. A short while later, the match was disrupted as Croatian fans behind the Czech goal began to throw flares and fireworks onto the pitch. As the match restarted a couple of minutes later, there wasn't much time left for the Czechs, and what's more, their perma-crocked captain Rosicki's hamstring gave way. They'd used all their substitutes, and hence they soldiered on, and soldier they did, as a long ball into the Croat box caught defender Vida's arm, and the English referee pointed to the spot to give the Czech Republic the unlikeliest of lifelines. Thomas Nesid, who had come on just minutes earlier, was entrusted with the spot kick, and somewhat predictably for a player who had suddenly been shown a lot of confidence, he stepped up and smashed the ball home, giving Subasic no chance. The game was level, 2-2. But that wasn't the end of the drama, as Czechs even had a chance to seal all 3 points and a remarkable come-from-behind victory, but another substitute, Sural, just narrowly missed making contact. A remarkable match ended 2-2. And then finally, from the same group, it was Spain versus Turkey from Nice. Now, Turkey coach Fatih Terim had been given an advantage going into the match because of knowledge of the Czechs and the Croats' draw, which meant that if Spain could beat Croatia in their match and if Turkey defeated the Czech Republic, a set of results that aren't completely unlikely, then his side would be assured of a second or third place finish and a good chance of progressing. However, he would need to avoid loss against Spain, which was no easy task. And looking at how the match started, he didn't even try. Turkey seemed as though they were going for all 3 points and even had a bright and combative start. Burak Yilmaz looked like he could trouble Pique and Ramos at the back, but that was just in the first 5 minutes. Spain gathered a toehold in the contest and one by one the chances started coming in. Alvaro Morata took a great shot in just the 7th minute and his effort to turn in a great cross by Jordi Alba hit the Turkish post. Gerard Pique almost added to his winner from the last match, but his header from David Silva's corner bounced over the crossbar. Perhaps he should have done better. On the other hand, set-piece expert Hakan Kalinoglu's free kick sailed just over De Gea's goal for the Turks. In the 33rd minute though, Spain were ahead. Nolito crossed the ball in from the left and his strike partner Morata connected with an inch-perfect glancing header to give the keeper no chance. A short while later, they were 2-0 up as Fabregas' through pass was deflected into Nolito's path and he expertly guided the ball past the keeper. Turkey's strategy had come undone and surely now it was just a question of how many Spain could manage. It went into the interval 2-0, but shortly after the restart, Iniesta slipped Jordi Alba in and the Barca man passed to Morata who scored his second. There was maybe a hint or two of offside, but the referees remained unmoved. Turkey did have a chance to open their accounts in the tournament, but after some good work, Yilmaz queued his curler wide. The match ended 3-0 to Spain. Now we have a treat for you. Here's Republic of Ireland manager Martin O'Neill and assistant manager Roy Keane's team talk to their players before their big match tonight. Martin O'Neill. Alright lads, alright, huddle up. Look alive, Seamus. You too, Houlihan. Put something on. Now, Belgium tonight. We know what they're all about. First things first, if you see Fellaini on the field, let him have the ball. Yeah, you heard right, Glenn, Aiden. No, don't pull his hair. You may ask him why it looks like that, but I repeat, do not get sent off and behave yourselves. This is France. It's a land of culture and sophistication. I will not have any of me players behaving like they would back home. I repeat, this is not the Raleigh Georgia pub back in Dublin. The people here drink champagne and bring their poodles to watch the footy. So I repeat, you will not embarrass yourselves or more importantly, me. Roy? Roy Keane. Oi, you heard the gaffer. No funny business. Although, if that pretty boy Hazard tries one more step over than is necessary to get past you talentless lumps, and you don't boot him in the shins, then I'm gonna walk onto the field and haul you off myself. Your performance against Sweden was a disgrace. If I'd had my way, I'd have sent each one of you back home, and no flying about, mind. You'd be swimming. And Kieran, what was that? Did someone forget to tell you which side you were supposed to score? Or are you Swedish now? You want us to start calling you Kieran Clarkimovic? Don't do that again. Gaffer? Martin O'Neill. Right. Well said. Alright, lads. The key tonight is stopping your De Bruynes and your Martins. There's no such thing as a De Bruyne, and the only Martin here is me. Understand? Now, at the other end, we need goals. Shane, you'll be playing up front, and just because your shirt says long doesn't mean you run away from the ball. Be brave, son. Play a bit. You're a footballer, aren't you? Not a greyhound. Stop. Think. Move. Ask. Receive. Pass. Run. Shoot. Score. That's all there is to it. Remember, we're gonna have to earn it. There may be a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow, but we're no leprechauns. We're footballers, and that's what we'll do. Roy? Roy Keane. Well said, gaffer. Also, O'Shea, don't hide. You're captain now. I used to wear that armband. Watching you prance around with it makes me want to hurl. As if it wasn't bad enough that you've won nearly as many Premier Leagues as me. I have 3 words for you. Lukaku. He's about half your age, so if he bothers you, eat his waffle. Alright lads, let's win this one, and then we can head on to Lille and spoil some of those Italians' pretty faces. I'll see you out there. Alright, moving on. Tonight we'll have the last of the second round of matches, so it's a final chance for the teams to get into an advantageous spot before the jamboree begins. In the first match, there are two teams who know that there's only one guaranteed qualification spot available. Belgium faced the Republic of Ireland in Bordeaux at one of the most square stadia you will ever see. Now to be fair, these two sides haven't got that much in common in terms of football history. They've only met 14 times before and never at a major international tournament. Also, you get the feeling that the Irish and the Belgians wouldn't really get along. We checked the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs' website, and their page on Belgium-Ireland relations more or less confirms that the two nations barely care about each other. Also, we checked to see if Belgium's most famous person ever, Tintin the Boy Reporter, had ever been to Ireland. As we expected, the closest he got was Scotland, and though you may think that his best friend Captain Haddock may at least have sailed there a couple of times on his travels, for the whiskey if nothing else, he was clearly partial to Scotch. And also he was French. The Belgians and Irish don't even agree on the things that they almost agree on, which is potatoes and beer. Both love potatoes and beer, like a lot of other countries, sure, but the Irish like their potatoes mashed and call their beer stout and ale and above all else Guinness, while the Belgians are famous for having invented fried potatoes and most of their many beers appear to be pale. No, the Irish and the Belgians have nothing in common, and so today is a grand day in the history of the relationship between these not too distant nations. Coming to the football, Belgium remain a good side despite Italy majorly denting their aura. Their trouble is that they appear to be a collection of individuals rather than a true team, and each is a separate issue. In terms of individual quality, the young Belgian stars, namely Hazard, De Bruyne and Lukaku, possess it in abundance. However, they've also got their issues at the moment. Eden Hazard was the player of the year in the Premier League in the previous season as Chelsea won the title, but in the season that just ended, like his side, he was abject. His return of just 6 goals was by far the least that he's managed in a season since he hit the same figure for French side Lille in 2008-2009, though he did so in fewer games then, just 35. Oh, but wait a minute. Did Eden Hazard play 35 matches in that season? How old was he then? The answer is that he was 17, which is also the age at which he made his debut for Belgium, a country that has a history of giving its young prospects early debuts, perhaps to keep them from representing other nations. Since his breakthrough season 8 years ago, Hazard has played more than 460 games. That's a fairly evenly spread 55 matches a season. And he's not alone. Romelu Lukaku, though he doesn't look it, is almost 2 years younger than Hazard. Also because he developed earlier, even as a centre forward, he broke through a year younger, first getting called up to the Belgian side at 16 and a half years of age. Since the 2009-2010 season, he's played about 275 club games and made 44 international appearances, scoring over 130 goals. That's just more than 45 games a season. That sort of relentless schedule from such a young age can have a devastating effect on young athletes. It makes them prone to burnout, both mentally and physically. Kevin De Bruyne is also similar, only he's had a few more troubles because of injury, even in the season gone by, which was in any case difficult for him, as it was his first after a big money move to Manchester City. The world of football is littered with players whose careers ended up not living up to their early promise because they shone too bright too soon. These three have been charged with providing goals for their teams since a young age, and that's a lot of pressure, and eventually all the games, the tackles, the little knocks and everything else begins to take its toll. There's a good chance they've arrived at this competition fatigued and in need of rest, but instead what they'll get is a shortened summer and then the heat will be on once again. 27 to 31 years of age are considered to be a footballer's peak years. Belgium stars need a break now if they're going to hit that peak. The other problem with Belgium is their coach. Mark Wilmots played for Belgium at a time when their team wasn't that great. He even starred for them at the 2002 World Cup when he scored 3 goals, but his record as manager is quite poor. Though not as poor as his short-lived political career. Some would say that he was groomed for this role, as assistant to Dick Advocaat and later to Georges Leekens, but his side were underwhelming in the World Cup 2 years ago, and they remain so still. They made it to the Euros by winning their qualifying group, but the group contained Wales, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Israel, Cyprus and Andorra, hardly the group of death. Wilmots must pull up his socks and get his team playing to their potential. This may entail using Lukaku as an impact substitute or playing like Germany did with no recognized centre forward, but with dynamic players in attacking positions. Against the Republic of Ireland, he will come up against a team that by and large fears no one. Make no mistake, while the Belgians will fancy their chances versus Sweden in the final game, it is far from a foregone conclusion that Italy will beat Ireland. They're fighters to a man, and so Belgium will have to beat them tonight. We don't think they will. The Republic to win 2-1 is our call. That match kicks off at 6:30 p.m. The final two matches are from the last group, that is the one that contains Hungary, Portugal, Iceland and Austria. At the outset, it felt like Portugal would have it easy in this one, but they didn't have the best of starts versus the minnows Iceland. Hungary too punched above their weight, pulling out all the stops in their derby win against Austria. Tonight at 9:30 p.m, the two overachievers, Iceland and Hungary, will play each other in Marseille, with Portugal and Austria, who meet at 12:30 p.m, watching nervously. It's really hard to say what will happen in that match, but if Hungary win and seal qualification, then the ante suddenly gets upped. The two countries have played each other several times in the 90s and noughties, and though none of those matches were in an international tournament, they were drawn together in the qualifying for the 2006 World Cup in a group along with Croatia, Sweden, Bulgaria and Malta. Back then, Hungary had won both matches. Each was a 3-2 thriller though, and Hungary's Zoltán Gera and Iceland's Ida Gudjonsson had scored in both fixtures, though neither side ended up qualifying for the tournament in Germany. Both players are now 37 and in the twilight of their careers. It's a good opportunity for Iceland to start Gudjonsson, who didn't feature versus Portugal. For Hungary, Zalai is the clear danger man. He was heavily involved in beating Austria and is high on confidence. He'll be a handful for the Icelandic defence. The excitement of playing at a major tournament for the first time will be Iceland's biggest advantage in this match, though adrenaline levels can't possibly be as high as they were in the Portugal match. It certainly shouldn't be pretty, but it could be high scoring, and we're hoping that history repeats itself and are backing Hungary for a 3-2 win. Regardless of that result though, only one thing will be on Portugal's mind, and that is crushing Austria. The draw versus Iceland after a pretty decent start was the kind of embarrassment that Portugal often suffer at the start of international tournaments. However, the group is still favourable to them, and so is the fact that Austria's central defender Alexander Dragovic is suspended. Cristiano Ronaldo and Nani are once again the danger men, and both were wasteful in front of goal in the previous match. It is entirely possible that coach Fernando Santos could ring in the changes in this one. At least one of Portugal's midfielders, mostly João Mario, could make way for the 18-year-old Renato Sanches, who in the short while that he was on the pitch in the previous match showed enough drive and composure to warrant a start this time around. A striker would also not be amiss, and would allow Ronaldo and Nani to also focus on creating chances. As usual with Portugal, there is likely to be no shortage of attempts on goal. Against Iceland, they had 9 on target and 9 off target, with 11 corners and 66% possession. At the back though, Pepe continues to be a loose cannon, and Carvalho is 38 years old, so that could give Alaba and Arnautovic some confidence. Also, Ronaldo hasn't endeared himself to anyone with some choice comments after the Iceland match, but that could also be a ploy of sorts. He's made a stellar career out of proving haters wrong with frankly unprecedented stats, and there'll be only one thing on his mind tonight, and that is to score as many goals as he can. We're backing him to come good and hopefully not be so wasteful with free kicks. 3-1 to Portugal sounds like a plausible scoreline. We're properly getting to the business end of the group stage. Exits for Portugal and Belgium at this point will be terrible for the tournament, and we hope that doesn't come to pass. Anything could happen though. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Ankit Prasad, and this has been European Nights.